Good morning, it's Jeff Wine, host of The Car Show here on Sun Sounds Radio. Folks, once again, we have an action-packed show for you today. Going to catch you up on the latest and greatest of the world of the automobile. A lot going on this weekend, folks. We got Formula One and Spa. We have IndyCars in Tennessee. And we have NASCAR at one of the oldest tracks that they race. That is in North Wilkesboro. So we'll be talking a little bit about some qualifying. Some really good articles regarding what's going on with Detroit and how maybe there are some decisions that were made that maybe didn't actually pan out the way they thought it were they thought they were. I've got some weird and unusual automotive news. Going to talk about a bridge in Greece and a gentleman who is 95 years old and a daily working mechanic in Nashville, Tennessee. Of course, we'll talk about what's going on with gas prices. And then, of course, it wouldn't be the car show without a little car talk. You know what to do. Fasten those seatbelts nice and tight. It's going to be a fast ride on the car show. Well, from the website The Street, which is investing and talking about the economy, the headline reads, American drivers just sent Detroit a clear message. Well, markets rarely speak in press releases. They speak in quiet, unglamorous acts of persons signing for a car and then driving it home. Well, Detroit spent the better part of a decade listening to a different signal. Executives read the headlines, the climate targets, the government incentives, and they concluded that the American drivers were ready to go fully electric. Well, General Motors staked its future on the all-electric lineup. Regulators dangled a $7,500 federal tax credit to pull buyers toward a battery-powered car. The transition, everyone agreed, was only a matter of time. Factory lines were retooled. Marketing budgets followed. The roadmap looked settled. The incentive vanished at the end of 2025, and buyers were left alone with their own wallets and their own commutes. And what they chose in the first half of 26 amounted to a blunt correction. Americans are not rejecting electrification. They're just rerouting it through the hybrid. Well, when I lined up the first half scorecards on each camp side by side, the pattern is hard to miss. Americans bought 2.2 fewer new vehicles in the first half of 2026 than the year earlier. Yet hybrid sales climbed over 9% at the same stretch, according to Kelley Blue Book. Now, pricier gas did help, with the pump prices up more than 20% from a year earlier, according to AAA. So I did the plan for convenience. Hybrid asked nothing new of the driver. No charge, no route planning. Pure electric vehicles, EVs, told an opposite story. They held nearly a 5.8% of the new vehicle sales in the second quarter, far below the record 10.6% that they reached in the third quarter of 2025 when buyers rushed to reach the tax credit expiration date, according to the folks over at Cox Automotive. Hybrids are, as one Cox Automotive analyst put it, having their moments, according to Forbes. Here's the first half picture. Hybrid sales rose nearly 9%, while new vehicle sales fell 2.2%. Hybrids captured a record 14.1% of the market in the first quarter and have grown 83% since 2023. General Motors sold zero plug-in hybrids to drivers in 2025 and just 2,400 hybrids in all. Effectively, every one of those was a Corvette. Well, my read on the GM disclosure is blunt. The company did not lose the hybrid race. Rather, it decided to sit it out. GM promised an all-electric fleet for years, while Toyota and increasingly Ford Motor Company kept hybrids on the menu. When demand for the EVs cooled, GM had nothing fuel-efficient left to sell except something that burned gasoline. Well, the costs also are on the scorecard. GM's second quarter sales fell 4.2%, and its only hybrid sale was the low-volume Corvette, according to CNBC. Its last mainstream plug-in was the Chevrolet Volt, and that was retired back in 2019. Now, the company is scrambling to undo that. GM plans to bring a plug-in hybrid vehicles back to the North American showroom in 2027, timed to a tougher fuel economy rules, according to the GM authority. That's a long wait before this shift happens. Ford, now, they hedged their bet earlier. Roughly a quarter of the F-150 pickup trucks sold last quarter were hybrids. And according to CEO Jim Farley, has pledged the hybrid option across the company's gas lineup by 2030. Tesla, the runaway leader in EV America, still sells batteries only, but it's wrestling with its own product headaches as well. Well, there's the message that gets personal for Detroit. The second quarter split the industry cleans the haves and the have-nots. The automakers with hybrids are the haves. The ones without, well, that's the story. Toyota's sales rose 1.1% in that same period, powered roughly by a 20% jump in electrified models, according to CNBC. Cox Automotive Economist warned that Toyota could overtake GM as the top-selling automaker in the country by the end of the year. That would end a run of the top sales position that GM has held for decades. Now, losing that crown would be more than a bragging rights problem. Product mix decides what factories run in overtime and which ones sit idle. So a powertrain picks in the showroom eventually reaches the assembly line and has a paycheck attached to it. The hybrid tailwind is lifting everyone in its own with its own lineup. Hyundai reported hybrid sales up 67% in the first half. North America called hybrids companies a growth engine right now. A through line is hard to argue. Automakers gave buyers a fuel-sipping option as it grew. One buyer said to wait for all-electric future. They lost ground, and they're not getting it back quickly. Well, the bigger point is what this looks like is a detour more than a destination. Americans are forming a lasting hybrid habit, not a temporary one. The first half of the data backs that up. The market itself is not shrinking, but tilting. Roughly 15.8 million new cars will sell in the country this year, and a growing share of those will run on a battery and a gas tank. For your next purchase, that means efficiency, no compromise vehicle. You might not want to wear a Detroit badge until 2027 when GM plug-ins finally arrive. For your portfolio, it means automakers will be making room. Toyota, Hyundai, and Honda are the ones who are printing the sales records while GM plays catch-up on a product it once dismissed. Not that the electric car experiment has failed, it makes the hybrid an affordable middle ground for most households to buy into these days, while the all-electric future waits on cheaper batteries and denser charging. Roughly one in four new cars are sold worldwide are now electric, according to the International Energy Association, cited by Kelley Blue Book. The America is the exception. Given the choice with its own money, U.S. drivers are making a pragmatic option. They handed Detroit a deadline that Detroit is still racing to make. Well, continuing on with the theme of what's going on in Detroit, from the pages of the Drive website, Bill Ford says car makers need to tackle China head on, even if they'd rather not. So some lawmakers have proposed measures to completely lock out Chinese automakers out of the United States. Automotive industry lobbyists have supported these efforts. Ford executive Bill Ford is singing a different tune. It's time for U.S. automakers to rise to the challenge. Quote, we have to go toe-to-toe with China, Ford said at the Axios meeting in Washington, D.C. on Tuesday, per the Wall Street Journal. We can't expect to keep them out forever. We have to be able to beat them at their own game. And this is an understandable stance, not one necessarily that feels popular within Ford. CEO Jim Farley told Fox News back in April, we should not let them in our country, referring to the Chinese EVs, and expressed concerns over the subsidies that Chinese auto sector receives from its own government, which argues makes competing with them not a fair fight. Now, Ford is also a member of the Alliance for Automotive Innovation, a lobbyist group specifically endorsed the Connected Vehicle Security Act proposed by Senators Bernie Moreno of Ohio and Alicia Slotkin of Michigan, which seeks to ban Chinese-built cars and their technology from the U.S. market. Quote, we need to make sure we're all playing the game by the same rules, but the Chinese automakers are flooding the markets around the world to cut-rate vehicles, according to John Bozella, the president and CEO of the AAI. In a statement made on Fox interview, Senators Moreno and Slotkin don't want it to happen here, and they're right. Legislation needs to be introduced today that sends a clear message. U.S. will not throw their doors open to the Chinese automakers and manufacture or sell here. Now, EV in question has already been welcomed into Mexico and recently in China under a new rule that allows for a limited quota of imports. Already cars being sold in North America with Chinese ties. Volvo was recently given the authorization by the Commerce Department to continue to do business in the United States, despite being owned by a Chinese conglomerate, Geely. Its sister brand Polestar was strangely not so lucky. The specific models sold in some established brands, such as the Lincoln Nautilus, will continue to be sold in the U.S. while being manufactured in China. Amid all this upheaval, it seems inconsistent interpretation of the rules. Bill Ford appears to be asking for a strategy beyond exclusion to withstand a regime change or two. Our leaders need to stand tall the political times ahead. I think an industrial policy is a bipartisan one, which I would say sounds difficult, but that's what we really need, Ford said. To Ford's credit, the company is attempting to preempt the Chinese competition with a product in the form of a $30,000 electric pickup truck. Answering the moment with a truck is very much like Ford to do, but it's not alone. Startup Slate is attempting to do the same thing on a smaller scale and a cheaper vehicle. If Chinese automakers manage to break in somehow, despite legislation brewing in Congress to thwart them, it'll be interesting to see how they compare. Though the way Bill Ford talks about it, it's a less a question of if, but when. Yeah, we have to be very careful because China is not playing the same game we are. They are definitely subsidized by their government, and that makes the game very much different. So there's a lot at stake here in the automotive industry. Well, from the pages of Old Cars Weekly, it's called The Scoop. Tornado devastates Mid-America Motor Works. Well, among those things claimed by the powerful tornado that rolled through central Illinois on June 17th was Mid-American Motor Works, a major Corvette supplier and home to Mike Yeager's My Garage Museum, which housed a fleet of rare and historic Corvettes. Mid-America campus took a direct hit and suffered massive damage. Michael Yeager Jr., president and CEO of the company, had a tough job reporting the news to his father, Mike Sr. Quote, "You know, I told him everything was gone," he said. And his father said, "Clarify what you mean, gone." I said, "Dad, everything is gone. The buildings are destroyed. The cars are gone. The inventory is gone. We're essentially going to have to start from new." Now, the senior Yeager, in an update on Facebook, said, "Every building on the campus is a total loss, including the museum, the corporate headquarters, the warehouse, and the vintage 1910 gas station on the property. Among the historic vehicles that were lost was the last C Corvette ever built and an earlier C5 prototype. The tornado was a part of a severe weather outbreak that crossed the Midwest with damage reporting across multiple counties in Illinois. Emergency management officials reported the tornado traveled roughly 12 to 15 miles across rural areas and parts of Effingham, Illinois. There were no fatalities and a small number of injuries were reported. Founded in 1974, Mid-America Motor Works grew into one of the largest aftermarket parts suppliers for Corvettes and Volkswagen enthusiasts in the country. And the annual Corvette Fun Fest, a huge gathering of Corvette owners and enthusiasts. There was no immediate words on what's happening with this year's Fun Fest, which is scheduled for September 19th. But the annual Volkswagen Fun Fest, which was scheduled for June 20th, was obviously immediately canceled. The Yeagers indicate that some or most of the buildings in Effingham Camp are going to be bulldozed, and the company would like to start over with brand new construction. So just a devastating loss for an amazing company to lose everything in their on their campus, from museums to cars to the warehouse to all the parts. It's just a sad story for this great company. Back to the website, The Drive. The headline reads, "Old School Tennessee Mechanic Celebrates 95th Birthday While Working at the Shop." John Larkin has been working on cars for 71 years and has no intention of stopping. Well, some people stress about not being able to retire by their 65th birthday. That never was a concern for John Larkin, a mechanic at USA Motor and Machine in Nashville, Tennessee, known as Papa John. He spent his 95th birthday on the job because he doesn't want to be anyplace else. "I enjoy it. It keeps my mind occupied and keeps you out of trouble," Larkin said in an interview with the News Channel 5 in Nashville. "I ain't never found nothing else that I like better." Well, born in 1931, Larkin has been working as a mechanic since 1955, when the first Tri-5 Chevy and Ford Thunderbirds were hitting the showroom. He spent much of that time working on fast cars. Larkin is a member of the Nashville Fairgrounds Speedway Hall of Fame, which preserves the history of the half-mile oval just located just outside the Tennessee's capital downtown, not to be confused with the 1.3-mile tri-oval at the Nashville Super Speedway. He was inducted in 2016, and according to Facebook posts from the Nashville Fairgrounds Racing History, From around that time, he was a sought-after engine builder as well as an official at the track. When many people are well into retirement, Larkin was looking for a new gig. He started working at USA Motors and Machine around the time he turned 80. Showing reporters around his workplace, he pointed to a freshly built V8, which was destined for a Camaro. Larkin still builds 5 engines a week and is eager to share his knowledge with his much younger coworkers. According to Michael Kelly, who was one of his colleagues, he called him the master book. Now, Larkin's wife died in 2019. He has 2 daughters and a granddaughter and well-appreciative coworkers who brought him lunch and a cake on the 95th lap around the sun for Papa John. It's unusual to see cars from 1930s outside a lawn or concourse or museum, let alone a mechanic of similar vintage. But Larkin is a welcome reminder that if you love what you're doing and you do it well, age is just a number. I saw the interview with this man, and incredible, what a great sense of humor. And boy, was he sharp. 95 years old and still building engines. Congratulations, Papa John. Well, Formula One raced in Spa, Belgium, which happens to be the only European Formula One track that I have actually been to, way back in 1990 with my good buddy Mitchell, and it is incredible. It's one of my favorite tracks in the world, and reminds me very much of Road America here in the United States. Well, Kimi Antonelli is starting from the pole. Max Verstappen will start in second. Lando Norris qualified in third, but is moved to the back because of a grid penalty, so George Russell will start in third position. So we'll see what happens. I will have those results for you next weekend. At the time I'm doing my radio show this morning, the race is going on right now, and Kimi Antonelli is in the lead, but I'll have those results for you next weekend. Last weekend, NASCAR was at Echo Park Speedway in Atlanta, and it was a late night or early morning. The race did not get over local time till almost 2 a.m. in the morning in Atlanta, a little bit before 11 o'clock here. And the headline reads, Ford hit the big 750 in NASCAR with Blaney's win at Echo Park. Well, Ryan Blaney delivered Ford's 750th NASCAR Cup victory in the early hours of Monday morning at Echo Park Speedway in Atlanta. It was a dominant performance by Team Penske driver Blaney. Won from the pole, swept all the stages, and led 171 of 263 laps. Quote, "It's really special just to be a small part of this team," Blaney said. "It's been incredible over my career. Gosh, since I started with Penske in 2013, they made the switch from Dodge, and they have never looked back. Jim Farley is a great leader. Marsh Rushbrook is fantastic on the racing side. I'm really proud to drive a Ford. It's been fun to have the success we've had with these folks. At the end of the day, they're racers, and that's what this company is built on. The success to win, the success to be in the Cup Series means a lot. All of 19 of Blaney's wins in the Cup Series have come driving a Ford, and Sunday's victory was the 109th for Team Penske with Ford. The first win for Ford in the series was June 25th, 1950, at the Daytona Speedway with Jim Florian. There have been 91 drivers that have won at least one race with Ford. And Ned Jarrett is the all-time winningest driver in the Ford cars in the series with 43 victories. NASCAR returns to the North Wilkesboro Speedway, and the headline reads, Blaney on the pole after qualifying was rained out. Ryan Blaney will start from the pole for the first NASCAR Cup Series points race at North Wilkesboro Speedway in nearly 30 years. Blaney was awarded the pole after a severe thunderstorm rolled through the area and canceled out qualifying. Great lap, Blaney joked. I look forward to Sunday. I've always enjoyed coming here for the All-Star races and excited when they announce that there is going to be a points race here. It's a long race for sure. Tomorrow, it's going to be 450 laps. That is a long way. Ty Gibbs will start on the front row with Blaney. Christopher Bell will start in third. And Carson Hocevar will start in fourth. And Tyler Reddick will round out the top 5. That race is on tonight, and that is going to be on TNT and HBO Max. Pre-races at 3 o'clock local time, and the race is at 4 o'clock if you'd like to catch that. Cars are down in Nashville at the Nashville Super Speedway, and Kyle Kirkwood is on the pole. Joseph Newgarden will start in second, McLaughlin in third, Alex Palou will start in fourth, and Scott Dixon will round out the top five. That race is going to be on Fox 10. That is slated to start at around 2:30. But what's interesting is that is the programming that's following the World Cup Championship between Spain and Argentina. So they have announced that the race will be held until the soccer match is over, because that is also going to be on Fox as well. For IndyCar, that's really good news, because that's a great lead-in to an IndyCar race, and hopefully a bunch of fans will stick around and watch some IndyCar racing. Well, from the weird and unusual automotive news, the headline reads, locals keep driving on this buckled bridge because it's quicker than the detour. The concrete span buckled in a 2023 storm but never got repaired, and that has not stopped people from driving on it. Well, nobody likes to sit in traffic, but drivers in central Greece are resorting to an extreme measure to make their trip short as possible. Residents of the city of Larissa and the farming communities around it are using a bridge that collapsed almost 3 years ago because it's shorter than the posted detour. As reported by a local media outlet, Storm Daniel, which ripped through Greece and Bulgaria, Turkey and Libya in September of 2023, leaving thousands of casualties and destroying plenty of infrastructure, especially in Greece, where 79 bridges were destroyed, and one of those was over the Pinos River. Well, the bridge isn't completely destroyed to deter impatient drivers. We're not talking about a full collapse here, but there's nothing really left of the span. Instead, the bridge is sagging like a paper plate at a backyard barbecue, the center section dipping within inches of the water, but not actually falling in, nor did it detach from the sections on either side of the river. So it's still possible to get across without testing the car's water fording capabilities. Yeah, I'm looking at a picture right now, and just imagine normal bridge, and then it goes down and looks like it's about ready to touch the water, and then comes back up again, and the video showed a car driving across the bridge, and I was like, well, that looks pretty dangerous, but it's lasted 3 years, so I'm not sure if Greece has the budget to get this fixed, but it doesn't look like they're going to get it fixed anytime soon. Well, gas prices with our friends over at AAA, and gas prices are up. Sorry to say, and I noticed that at the gas pump myself personally. Right now, the average gas price in the United States is up to $3.99 a gallon. Over New Mexico, $3.97, Colorado, $3.96, Utah, $4 a gallon, Nevada, $4.16, California, $5.48, and Arizona, $4.25 a gallon. That's right, folks. Over in Texas, $3.56, $3.58 in Oklahoma. So definitely gas prices are on their way up. So let's talk about what's going on here with our local gas prices in the state of Arizona. Expensive gas in the state is in Littlefield, Arizona, the TA Express at $3.47. How about this, folks? The 76 and Shell Station at 3455 West Glendale Avenue is $3.49, and that was reported just 7 hours ago on Gas Buddy. The Sam's Club in Tucson at $3.55. The Maverick Station in Littlefield at $3.57. The Arco Station in Gilbert, check this out, 37 North McQueen Road, 1 hour ago, $3.59 a gallon. Sam's Club at $3.59 in Tempe. The Sinclair Station at $3.59 on 2649 West Indian School Road. The Arco Station in Tucson at $3.59 as well. So it's interesting that some of these cheap gas prices are actually here in Phoenix. Let's see what else is going on with our gas prices here in the metro. We've already identified some really good gas prices here as well. Sam's Club in Gilbert at $3.64, the Arco Station in Guadalupe at $3.65, the Walmart on Baseline at $3.65, and how about this? This is the first time we've had this. The Buc-ee's Station, yes, the Buc-ee's gas station at North Bullard Avenue in Goodyear at $3.69 a gallon. So if you've never been to a Buc-ee's, folks, I highly recommend checking it out. There's been a big push out there. It's brand new here in town. But with all the traveling I do and the road trips, I've been to Buc-ee's for many years. And I can tell you this, they make one fantastic brisket sandwich as well. A lot of fun. Took my wife there for the first time earlier this year, and she was amazed at how cool Buc-ee's really is. Well, we've reached that time of the show. Time for a little car talk. A dear car talk, I have a 2005 Chevy Trailblazer, which starts fine with a cold start. After several miles, however, when I come to a stop sign or a traffic light, the oil pressure gauge crashes to zero. I get a warning light that tells me I have to stop the engine, and my RPM drops below 1,000. When I start driving again, everything returns to normal. Also, I keep the RPMs above 1,000. There is no problem, other than the issue that everything that reads on the dashboard is still normal. Now, I've had mechanics tell me that the engine needs to be replaced or rebuilt that is burning oil. I wonder if it's not that serious, and possibly if the RPMs are just getting too low and the car thinks it's about ready to stall. I wonder if there's a simpler, something simpler than the mechanics are making it out to be. And that's from Greg. Well, no. Unfortunately, there's not a simpler thing that the mechanics are making it out to be, Greg. Well, it is simple. In one sense, you have to fork over a lot of money and they'll fix it for you. I hate to be the bearer of the bad news, but I'm afraid you're going to need an engine replacement. Now, I think your mechanics, it seems, are right. Your engine is worn out and it can't maintain proper oil pressure anymore. Here's what happens. Your engine is properly lubricated. Oil gets forced in the tiny spaces between the important parts. That keeps them well lubricated as they rub against each other at high speeds. The oil in those spaces escapes slowly, which is okay because the pressure is always forcing more oil in there. But when your parts get old and worn out, the spaces get bigger and the oil flows out much too quickly. Then the pump can't maintain enough pressure to keep the oil in there. That's when your oil warning light comes on and tells you to shut down the engine immediately, because at that point you're not getting properly lubricated and damage is being done. And that's also when you start seeing plumes of blue smoke, burning oil, coming out of your tailpipe. And I'm sure that's what your mechanic saw when you drove into their shops. Maybe if you go back during mosquito season, they'll possibly be happier to see you, because since you're doing a little free fogging for them, because your oil is running through your engine and getting burnt. Greg, the pump pumps harder as it goes faster, and that's why the engine is idling. When it's idling slower, that's when the light comes on. That's the oil pressure makes its first appearance when the engine is turned on. Eventually, it'll be on all the time. So I don't think putting a remanufactured engine in this car is as good as it should be with a 20-year-old car, no more than I would advise my great-grandfather to get a nose job. Some things are just not worth putting money into at this time. But if your Trailblazer's in good shape, you can try to nurse it out for a while, experiment with some heavy oil, or turning up the idle speed yourself. But carry a dozen roses with you all the time for a funeral, and I would suggest bringing a screwdriver along as well to take your license plates off the car at the same time. Good luck, Greg. Yeah, I'm sorry to say this engine is toast, but I think the idea of maybe turning the idle up and putting some heavy oil in might get this guy just a little more, fewer or more miles on this vehicle. Well, that's all the time we have for the car show, folks. My name's Jeff Wine. We'll meet you back again on the radio next Sunday, and you're listening to Sun Sounds Radio of Arizona.